Blog Talk Radio.
Like the folks you meet on, like to plant my feet on the Brooklyn Bridge. What a lovely view from heaven looks at you from the Brooklyn Bridge. I love to listen to the wind through her strings, the song that she sings for the town. I love to look up at the clouds in her hair. She's learned to wear like a crown. If you've been a rover, journey's end lies over the Brooklyn Bridge. Don't let no one tell you I've been trying to sell you the Brooklyn Bridge. All the folks in Manhattan are sad, 'cause they look at her and wish they had the good old Brooklyn. You've been a rover, journey's end lies over the Brooklyn Bridge. Don't let no one tell you that I've been trying to sell you the Brooklyn Bridge. You'll miss her most when you roam, 'cause you'll think of her and think of home, the good old Brooklyn you meet on, like to plant my feet on the Brooklyn Bridge. What a lovely view from heaven looks at you from the Brooklyn Bridge. I love to listen to the wind through her strings, song that she sings for the town. I love to look up at the clouds in her hair. She's learned to wear like a crown. If you've been a rover, journey's end lies over the Brooklyn Bridge. Don't let no one tell you I've been trying to sell you the Brooklyn Bridge. All the folks in Manhattan are sad, 'cause they look at her and wish they had the good old Brooklyn.
Welcome again to Howe's New York with Brooklyn real estate attorney Robert Howe. It's our monthly recap episode where we look back on the top news stories in Brooklyn real estate for the previous month. And this time we're looking back at the month of May. And here, as always, is our host, Robert Howe.
Well, thank you, Jason, and welcome everyone to Howe's New York. I'm your host again, Robert Howe. And we're talking about a multitude of topics, including real estate, community, politics, and any hot topics of the day. As you know, we're broadcasting from an undisclosed location in Brooklyn, New York, to a potential audience stretching from Longyear, Buyer, Norway, to Ushuaia Tierra del Fuego, thanks to the power of Blog Talk Radio. I'm here with my executive producer, Jason Versace of Rising Tide Marketing. And as Jason mentioned, tonight is our monthly recap, a couple days late, but better late than never, of what went on in Brooklyn in the month of May 2017. And as usual, Jason has done a tireless job as in unearthing the best real estate stories around the city for us to discuss tonight, and tonight is no different. So, Jason, with that, why don't you tell us a little something about what you are planning on discussing?
Well, I think in some of our previous episodes, we started to see a little trend where more stories were creeping in that said, oh, you know, things are slowing down or things aren't increasing at the rate they were in terms of, you know, pricing and then sales, and, you know, where we were at a point where almost every episode we were noting a new record high. And then in the past couple of episodes, we kind of said, you know what, maybe there is a little bit of a plateau, if you will, not really, but as much as we've seen. This episode, I think, the theme might be a couple of stories reinforced that that's not the case, and things are still booming. At least if we take these stories and outlets at their word. The first one comes from Brownstoner, brownstoner.com, which is a popular real estate media outlet. It discusses a recent conference, a real estate conference, the Brownstoner Real Estate Conference that was held in Williamsburg. And the headline is Brooklyn Boom Nowhere Close to Ending. And this is what a lot of the experts were talking about at this conference. So I think that maybe it's good to hear this type of position from the experts, although you might want to couch it by saying that it is, you know, talking to a room full of real estate experts who want this to be true.
Well, yeah, certainly we all want it to be true. We want real estate to keep going up, up, up. And honestly, real estate is going up. I mean, they do mention that there has been a slowdown a bit in the number of sales, but the prices are still going up, and partly due to, you know, a tight inventory. There are people out there still bidding up the properties in that tight inventory sector. And there, you know, Brooklyn still has that cachet of being hot, hot, hot. So people still want to be here, you know, no matter what. And you know, foreign firms are still buying up what were big empty warehouses or factories that have gone defunct, and turning them into luxury properties. And there are still people looking to buy, you know, a luxury apartment in a repurposed warehouse, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, we've looked at that from a number of different angles, a number of different stories that have talked about Brooklyn's real estate market being impacted greatly by commercial spaces and people, you know, looking to bring businesses of all different sizes and different industries to Brooklyn. And then with that comes more residential sales of people, you know, wanting to work close to where, or live close to where they're working. And it's a good point that you mentioned that I think in terms of seeing any type of alteration to statistics, it might have more to do with what you mentioned about the inventory and lack of an inventory, maybe an inventory slowdown more so than a price resistance slowdown where you know, people are saying, hey, that's just too much, I'm not going to spend. It's because there isn't enough to go around. And maybe if that were the case, maybe prices would kind of level off a little bit more, but I don't even know if that would impact the real estate market in Brooklyn. So I do think that those are factors that really are more telling. And in this article, the Massey Knackle, co-founder Bob Knackle, described it pretty good, where he said that, you know, Brooklyn, we're in the third inning, and that there's another wave coming. And that seems to be the consensus of a lot of these folks who are at this conference.
You know, and the people, you know, the new residents of Brooklyn want to work in cool new places, and it doesn't have to be a shiny glass steel office building. It could be a four-story building that may have stored sugar or hay or stuff, or did light manufacturing and has the name of the business on top of the building itself. That's a time when, you know, businesses built their own buildings and put their name on the top of it. And this is very much, attractive to them. And, you know, and these spaces now are some, they do make mention that some of it is in central Brooklyn. Well, that was, you know, an industrial area at that point. And now that industry has moved or changed, and how you have all these empty spaces. I mean, they're great for, you know, transformation into luxury apartments, beer halls, shuffleboards, ice cream parlors, and that's what, you know, people are looking for. And they're also looking for, you know, office space also that's cool to be at, to be able to say that I work in such and such building that years ago used to manufacture something or store something or was very important in a certain industry. So, you know, those are, a lot of things. I do want to point out one of my college friends was one of the speakers, although I see he's changed his look a little. Orion Serhant of Nest Seekers. Many of you may have seen him on TV. I haven't seen him in a while, but now I see that his gray hair has given away to a little bit of brown hair. I was struck when I first met him out of college. He had grayer hair than me, but little did I realize that people of his generation are dyeing their hair gray. I guess, though, he's realizing that people of our generation don't want our hair gray. So he's making some sort of an accommodation, it looks like, at least in the photographs that Brownstoner has brought up. But he is a Hamilton graduate, and I'm also a proud Hamilton graduate, as is my son Trevor. And Hamilton, for those of you who don't know it, is smack dab in the middle of nowhere in New York State, right by Utica. And gives a great education, turns out great people. So that's my Hamilton plug. And, you know, Ryan Serhant was at this, another Hamiltonian was one of the guest speakers at this seminar. So what else do we have?
I should have budgeted in some time for a recruitment from the alumni.
Yes,
for Hamilton. But there was another thing you touched on that I thought the whole idea of industrial feel and how I do think people want to live and work in Brooklyn, and now they also want to know that and want to be aware of that and want to see that. It seems like this melding of industrial and, you know, tree lined hamlets is kind of a Brooklyn hallmark. And even from going to different parts of the country in the past year and a half, I've been to Denver, Colorado, parts of New Hampshire, and out to Kansas City, and seeing their areas that they've been developed and repurposed for real estate purposes. They also wanted to, you an area that would not have been known for an industrial area or an industrial city, like Brooklyn and New York were known for their whole existence. Taking pockets of those cities and turning them into that in a district that might have been a manufacturing district, and then now repurposing the buildings for new housing, but yet keeping that same industrial design and look and feel. And I think that that pretty much started in Brooklyn. And I think that it's kind of branching out to the rest of the country. They're trying to really adopt that style, that same urban meets, suburban country/country style that Brooklyn seems to have as its pretty much its niche.
That is, we do have a lot of unique architecture, and it's worthwhile keeping, and it does evoke a certain feeling and flair and flavor that does good things to people's minds.
Well, next story comes from Curbed. Curb.com, and talks about the state of Staten Island real estate. And Staten Island, we don't often touch on or come up or comes up on the show, but you know, they are, being in Bay Ridge, they're just a stone's throw away. And Staten Island has been on the move, and while maybe it isn't the new Brooklyn, or you know, everyone's trying to become, each neighborhood in Brooklyn was trying to become the new hot neighborhood, but in the grander scheme, who's going to become the new Brooklyn? And while Staten Island might not have that cachet yet, this article does, profess that the real estate is booming while at a slower pace. But we know that there are things on the horizon for Staten Island.
Well, there is a lot of stuff on, both happening now, a lot of new houses. They got hammered pretty well by Sandy. Many of those houses have been knocked down and rebuilt according to the new building standards. A garage on the first level and then housing on the second and the third level to comply with whatever, flood regulations there are. So that's going on. They have the wheel going in. They have the waterfront properties being developed. That's what you're talking about, what's on the horizon. And I mean, also right now they have houses for, $400,000 or $500,000, which you're really not going to find in too many, communities in the metropolitan area. And it really allows a couple first-time buyer to jump into the market, and with the hope of some nice appreciation, down the line, allowing them maybe to move up into a larger property or a different community. So, not much different than what's going on in the borders of Queens, where some of the stuff from Williamsburg, Greenpoint, Bushwick is jumping over the border into communities on the other side of Queens. Where there may still be some values. People are, jumping out of Brooklyn now into Staten Island, realizing that, geez, you can buy a whole new house for $400,000 or $500,000, and that probably would not buy you a studio co-op in any one of the hot neighborhoods, and definitely wouldn't buy you a condo. Well, most condos are starting in the $500,000 and up range. So, it is a pretty good value, and you got the ferry transportation going on there. People love that. Ferries are hot all throughout the Brooklyn waterfront now. Staten Island's always had it. So, there's no reason to believe that, there might be a little different. You might not see the coffee shops and the trendy boutiques and the really on-the-edge type cuisine of some of the other restaurants in some of the other communities, but they have, fine restaurants and just everything is very positive about Staten Island.
The one knock or the two knocks that I picked up on that I found interesting and that might be tough to overcome is it mentions the lack of Manhattan brokerage firms, which we've talked about before on the show, which are now and have been for some time planting their flags in Brooklyn and staking out greater and greater presences in Brooklyn. And also the lack of international investment, which your article points to, which you mentioned earlier and which we've detailed before, is something that is a huge, huge draw for Brooklyn, is the international money that has been coming into the real estate market here for a while.
Well, yeah, I don't see Staten Island as being an area where foreign investment, may hang its hat. Although it's possible along some of the waterfronts, there could be. I know in one of the articles that we're talking about, they're talking about Israeli firms, buying and developing waterfront properties elsewhere. But I don't know if that. Yeah, you're right. That's probably not going to happen in Staten Island. You're not going to have that. Commercial development also that's also fueling the residential stuff, but sometimes people do just want to live in a community without a factory down the street or a warehouse they want a community, and they do mention in the article that this is a community oriented area, and the Staten Islanders, I think a lot of them probably even could do without the bridge. If we took the bridge down, they probably wouldn't care. They're happy to stay on Staten Island, and they have just about everything they need on Staten Island. So, they're pretty much. And that will appeal to certain types of people who want to live in a community. They don't want to live in a 50-story co-op. There's some people who do and some people who don't, and the people who don't, they're going to go to Staten Island and buy themselves a big $500,000 house, and be very well off with all the services and schools and the retail and restaurants that they have to offer.
Well, our next story, as we move from Staten Island back to Brooklyn, comes from the New York Times real estate section, and it gives us some options of where to live when the L train shuts down. This is something that we've also talked about, being an impact on real estate. Not that it would move the needle significantly, but it is something that has been has caused some angst. And while this article points out some areas that might be similar. Neighborhoods to move to for L train victims, specifically calling out renters. I do wonder. Obviously, you're not going to, if you're an owner, you're not going to sell just for the L train. If you're looking to buy, you're probably not going to. Maybe would be some impact on your decision, but. Like we said, with inventory being what it is, if you find a place you like, you probably wouldn't completely rule it out just because of the L train. But I do wonder, even with renters, how many people would actually place a live if I don't have a L train?
Yes, well, this is, I don't know, I hate to use the word fake news, but I don't know if there are too many people having a lot of angst about. Well, there are a lot of people having angst about L train.
Even crept into their real estate section.
Yes, fake news. It certainly will impact people. It'll be a pain in the ass, and they'll just have to deal with it. And it's a year or two, and make alternate plans. But as you point out, I don't think too many people are leaving because of. The L train. Maybe some people will think twice before moving in to the L train areas, but I don't think too many are going to be moving out just because of the the L train. It's not like they're putting some sort of a waste transfer station or a house of detention in the or a drug rehabilitation, you know, facility in the middle or a mental institution in the middle of Williamsburg or along the L train lines that are going to cause people to move out. But this is more of making more of it than it really is. But you know what is interesting is now not only do they say that people are probably going to be moving out in the droves from Williamsburg, let's see where they're going to go to. They're going to go to other areas that have subways. And, you know, just to think, you know, 40, 50 years ago, people were going to the suburbs. They wanted to get away from subways. They wanted to get away from buses. They wanted to drive their big old gas-guzzling cars, park it in front of their house with a lawn, and now people are moving back, like, right next to the rumbling overhead trains. So it is. But they're saying, you know, Flatbush Avenue, to move to Flatbush Avenue. Where else are they? Mott Haven in the Bronx. That is kind of a hike, you know.
Yes. It seems a little alarmist to push Mott Haven to the Bronx just to, you know, try and say what trendy places there are to eat in Mott Haven.
Yeah, exactly. Lower East Side, Manhattan. Well, people want to be there anyway. I mean, that's not like they're not like anybody's finding this out for the first time. That's a very, you know, very hip neighborhood. But it is an interesting article that I think kind of made a problem where there really wasn't a problem and created a solution when, you know, they really didn't need a solution, but it's really just a
neighborhood preview in search of a crisis.
Yeah. Yes, looking for a crisis, exactly.
Our last story comes to us from The Real Deal, and like I said, we're kind of bookending this episode with sort of another indicator of positive news, even though we didn't have, it wasn't anything catastrophic, but we did, things may be slowing down due to a lot of factors, including inventory, but here are some of the biggest deals of the first quarter. And you'll see that this still some pretty impressive numbers being transacted in Brooklyn real estate for in commercial spaces. With the first one being $600 million in Dumbo Heights. So that's a pretty sizable number.
Yes, these are all big real estate investment firms that are looking for big spaces to develop into luxury luxury condos, I should say. No more co-ops, really. Luxury condos and luxury rentals in spaces that had once... there is a mention of a Williamsburg apartment building that once housed an illegal matzah bakery in the basement. So I don't know how that sexy that sounding that is if you tell somebody, oh, I live in a building that used to make illegal matzahs. I wonder if the matzahs were illegal or it was illegal to make them. We have to figure that out. But once again, this goes to, you know, they're buying properties that have some cachet, some history to it, you know, a lot of marketing going in here. But you do mention, you know, these properties, Dumbo Heights portfolio, $600 million, Pearl Street, $103 million, Avery Hall, Key Food, $45 million. And I was also looking, I'd seen the redone front of Macy's on Fulton Street, but I don't think I saw an article related to that. But in any event, Macy's is redoing their space on Fulton Street, and I think they're going to have either offices or residential on the upper floors. And Macy's, you know, is putting a lot of money into. I was into the building recently, and it's similar to all the newer retail stores, all white marble, all very bright lighting, and yet I'm just wondering how they're holding off, you know, the online sales people, you know, the online sales companies, how they're doing, and you know, in light of all of the renovation that they're doing. But it is a pretty impressive place. But at one time, Macy's had probably 10 floors of retail, and they're cutting you know, way back on a lot of that, and you know, but it is a, you know, they've redone their whole storefront, and all of Fulton Street has come under renovation and is all brand new.
And in case you're wondering, $55 million deal for the illicit matzah makers of Kent Avenue, which is further development of that waterfront area or close to the water down downtown Brooklyn, and also a very hot area. And with that, I think we're at the end of our episode recapping the continuing boom in Brooklyn and putting a bow on it with the illegal matzah makers.
Yes, well, we did have a few good laughs. We had a few good articles. You know, it's still hot. Prices are going up. People are leaving Williamsburg and Greenpoint and wherever the L train goes in flocks, and wringing their hands and going up to Mott Haven section of the Bronx to escape, you know, the L train renovation. But we did have a lot of laughs. But the bottom line, once again, Brooklyn is still hot, and people are still spending anywhere from $1 million to $600 or $700 million. In property development. Well, this concludes tonight's radio program. Thanks to Blog Talk Radio for hosting our show, and thanks to our executive producer, Jason Versace, for once again unearthing the most interesting articles about what happened in Brooklyn real estate in May of 2017. This is How's New York signing off. God bless Brooklyn and all of its people, wishing you a good night and a good morning and a good afternoon. I am your host, Robert Howe.
Like the folks you meet on, like to plant my feet on the Brooklyn Bridge. What a lovely view from heaven looks at you from the Brooklyn Bridge.